Americans have an average of 4 credit cards. Do you really need that many? And how many is enough? I am Rob West. Too often we hang on to credit cards we no longer use, providing an unnecessary invitation to identity thieves to run up charges in your name. Canceling them is a good idea if done properly. I'll talk about that today, and then it's on to your calls at 800-525-7000. That number is 800-525-7000. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Well, Christians should always take Proverbs 10:4 seriously. It reads, "A slack hand causes poverty, but the hand of the diligent makes rich." We certainly don't want to have a slack hand when managing credit cards. I know you agree because we get a lot of questions about credit cards, and two of them go something like this. If I close a credit card account, will it affect my score? And why does it affect my score? Your credit score will drop a little after closing an account. Most people are surprised by that because it seems like you're being punished for doing the right thing. But it really comes down to mathematics and complicated computer algorithms. To find out why your score drops, we'll have to simplify things. So first, a definition. An algorithm is just a set of rules that solve a problem in a limited number of steps. Algorithms live in computer models that give you more credit score points for having three things: long-standing accounts, more available credit, and more kinds of accounts, like a credit card, auto loan, and mortgage. If closing an account falls under one or more of those factors, your score goes down. So just remember, the longer you have an account open, the more credit you don't use, and the more types of accounts you have, well, the higher your score. In fact, those three factors make up 55% of your FICO score. Now, why is that? Well, it's simply because having old accounts, unused credit, and more kinds of accounts tells lenders that you're more likely to pay them back. But is this really something to worry about when you close an account? A slight drop in your credit score? Usually not. But there's one occasion when it could be important. If you're shopping for a mortgage or some other kind of loan, you want the highest score possible. Lowering your score by even a few points could put you in a lower range of scores, and that could affect the interest rate you get on the loan. A higher interest rate means money out of your pocket every month. But in most cases, when you're not seeking a loan, a slight drop in your credit score means very little. You'll quickly make that up if you keep the outstanding balances below 30% on remaining accounts and you make your payments on time. So you may be asking, why bother closing an account after you've paid it off, especially if it's going to cost you points on your credit score? Well, there are at least two good reasons. First, it eliminates the temptation to use it if you run into an unexpected financial problem. That's what your emergency fund is for, and you should use that money if the car breaks down or the water heater starts giving you cold showers. I've already mentioned the second reason to close an unused account. It's the constant threat of identity theft. If your account is hacked, it'll cause you a lot of headaches, especially if it's unused and you're not paying any attention to it. Now, even though I said go ahead and close an unused account and don't worry about your credit score, you don't want to close several of them at once, even though that would feel really good. Closing a bunch of accounts at once will multiply the negative effect on your score. The best way to close unused accounts is gradually, no more than one or two every 6 months. That way you spread out the negative impact while at the same time minimizing it by keeping low balances and making on-time payments with your other accounts. Now, here are the steps to closing an account and making sure it's closed. First, pay off any remaining balance. Then check any recurring charges on the account and cancel or transfer them. After that, call your card issuer and tell them to cancel the account. You may want to follow up by writing an email or letter to your credit card issuer to confirm your card's been canceled. Finally, double-check your credit reports at all three credit bureaus, Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax, to make sure the account's been closed. You can get them for free at annualcreditreport.com. Okay, so that's why you should close an unused account and how you should do it. And again, don't worry about how it affects your score. Hey, have you checked out our new FaithFi app? You can use it to manage your money and get a clear picture into your spending and perhaps make sure it's going where you want it to. You can learn more at faithfi.com. Just click app. All right, your calls are next, 800-525-7000. I'm Rob West, and we'll be right back. Stay with us.
For American Family Radio, I'm Charles Morris with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. What is the Christian life all about? It's a deceptively difficult question to answer. Is it about worship? Yes. Is it about faith? Yes. It's about a lot of things, but what is it all about? The Lord puts it perfectly in Leviticus 19, "You shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy." That's the gospel in one line. We are made holy. He takes us out of darkness into light. He cleanses us of all our sin, and our holiness comes from Him. Yet it doesn't stop there. Be holy. That means live in light of your holiness. Strive against sin. Love the Lord and your neighbor. Be holy. Why? Christ is and has made you holy. Spend more time with Jesus. Visit GetAnchored.com.
Hey, Greg, I need some advice.
Oh, what's up?
I'm really struggling with finding ways to cut back. With costs going up, especially in healthcare, what do you guys do?
We use CHM, Christian Healthcare Ministries. It's a health cost sharing ministry that's been sharing members' eligible medical bills for over 40 years. Sure helped us stick to our budget. Here's the website, chministries.org. chministries.org.
When love has no evidence, it believes the best. When the evidence is adverse, it hopes for the best. And when hopes are repeatedly disappointed, it just courageously waits and endures. That's real love.
Join Dr. David Jeremiah for his series, The Power of Love, next time on Turning Point.
5:30 a.m. and 7 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
We are grateful for support from LitePoint Portfolios, which seeks out family and faith-friendly investments for 401k and 403b plans, integrating faith values and fiduciary duty. LitePoint Portfolios offers retirement plans for a variety of organizations, such as businesses, nonprofits, and churches, and we're grateful for their sponsorship of the Faith and Finance Program. More information is available at LitePointPortfolios.com.
If the heavy burden of debt is robbing you of freedom and peace of mind, Christian Credit Counselors can help. We're a nationwide nonprofit credit counseling organization that has helped over 300,000 individuals in the last 27 years get out of credit card debt 80% faster while honoring that debt in full. To learn how Christian Credit Counselors can help you, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org or call 800-557-1985.
So thankful to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. All right, it's time to take your calls and questions today. We'd love to know what you're thinking about financially. We've got some lines open. We want to help you apply the wisdom from God's Word, a biblical worldview, to the practical decisions and choices you're making today, whether that's living, giving, owing, or growing. Those are the only four things you can do with money. It's the money you spend on your lifestyle, the money you give away, the money you owe for debt and taxes, and then the money you grow for your short-term savings, like your emergency fund or perhaps a down payment on a house, or for the long-term in light of retirement. But with all of that, we have to recognize first that God owns it all and we're stewards, so we want to be faithful as wise stewards over a long period of time, applying God's wisdom, living with contentment, giving generously, balancing all of these ideas with our eyes fixed on the eternal, not the temporal, but yet navigating the actual decisions and choices we need to make every day. We want to help you do that here on this program, so you can give us a call with your questions. Again, 800-525-7000. Let's dive in today, and we're going to begin with Ann. She tried to join us on Friday. Unfortunately, we ran out of time, so Ann, delighted to have you with us. How can I help?
Yes, thank you. I would like to know, in case of an IRS audit, do I need to be able to prove that checks that I wrote to charitable organizations for less than $250, do I need to be able to prove that those organizations are 501c3s? Do I have to have that documentation in hand?
Yes. Will you be itemizing your deductions, and do you know whether you take the standard deduction or whether you actually will itemize and list out each of your charitable contributions?
I will itemize.
You will itemize. Okay. Yeah. So if that's the case, you do want to be able to document that. You know, you can deduct a charitable contribution of $250 or more only if you have written acknowledgement from the charitable organization. Now, you would want to ensure that they are a 501c3. And, you know, in terms of what that documentation is, the record-keeping requirement includes either bank or credit union statements, canceled checks, or credit card statements. They just need to show the date paid or posted, the name of the charity, and the amount of the payment. You know, you could do a quick search to determine whether or not they are a 501c3 charity. Is that your main concern? Is it the record-keeping, or is it the verification of the nonprofit status?
Well, I know that they are 501c3. I knew that at the time, either at the time that I contributed or asked them afterwards, but I don't have that in writing.
Yes. Yeah, you don't need that in writing. That would be fine. That's not on you to show. You really just need to be able to show that you made the contribution, and that's where the canceled check or the information, you know, from your financial institution showing that that payment was made. And then you're also going to want to get a receipt for that. They should issue you a contribution statement that reflects that canceled check or that transaction, and you'll have both of those that will verify that you, in fact, made the contribution, but you don't need to have documentation as to their 501c3 status.
But I need that for contributions of less than $250. I still have to have a statement from them.
Yeah, well, so, you know, the substantiation requirements for the donations of less than $250, you know, you would still want a receipt from the organization showing the name, the date, and the location of the contribution and a description of what was made. You know, for me, I would, you know, typically get that, you know, in every case, just so if you ever did get audited, you're able to show, you know, that you did make it. The IRS reporting requirement, though, you know, in terms of the record keeping, does establish this, you know, contribution of $250 or more, where you need to be able to provide, you know, not only written acknowledgement, but that canceled check. But for me, I would just do it for all of them, you know, unless, I mean, do you have lots and lots of donations? Is that going to be, you know, onerous on you?
It's going to be a lot of organizations.
Yeah. And how many of those are less than $250?
Almost all of them.
Oh, really? Okay. They're all small. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I would just say, you know, get that receipt from the charitable organization, even in the case of less than $250. I think the step you could avoid in that case would be the documentation on your side, going and pulling that canceled check or the information from your, you know, financial account showing that you made the payment. I would be comfortable with less than $250 as long as you have that receipt from the charitable organization. You'd be covered there. When you go over $250, I would have it on both sides, both the contribution receipt from the ministry charity and also the information showing it leaving your own personal account.
Well, I think it actually would be easier for me to pull this canceled check than to get all of these receipts.
Yeah. Well, you know, that should probably do it. I mean, you know, when, like I say, the burden of requirement at $250 or less is certainly lower. And so if you had the ability to show that money leaving and where it was going, I think that would be sufficient. Do you file your tax return yourself or do you use a CPA?
I do them myself.
You do. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, I think, you know, as long as you had one side or the other, I would be comfortable with that.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, man. Thank you for your generous heart. And we appreciate you being on the program today. May the Lord bless you. 800-525-7000 is the number to call. Let's talk to Shelley in Indiana. Go right ahead.
Good morning, Rob. I'm following up with your statement about canceling your credit card slowly, one at a time, to reduce your risk of identity theft.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if you can call the company and just have them put a freeze on it so that nobody can use it unless you give them permission to do so.
Yeah, so I think when you're talking about the credit freeze, you're talking about something slightly different. A credit freeze is where you would, contact the credit bureaus, tell them to lock or freeze your credit, which establishes a PIN number, and that would then prevent somebody from fraudulently opening a new account in your name, because when they went to open the account and the lender attempted to verify your credit because they're impersonating you, they wouldn't be able to do so because the credit is frozen. They wouldn't have your PIN number, and then they would be stopped in their tracks. That's a little different than an account that's active that could be compromised because somehow they got your credit card number and they started charging on it. It's also just one more account you need to keep up with. Now, in more and more cases, some credit card companies do have the ability for you to essentially maintain the account but turn it off. I've got this functionality, for instance, with my son's debit card. I can go in and push a button and it essentially cuts it off if I wanted it to. But eventually, they're just going to cancel that account if you do that. So what I would do is, you know, still over time, if you have an account you're not planning on using, I would try to get rid of it. It's just going to keep you from having one more account that could be compromised and give you less upkeep in terms of keeping up with it and overseeing whether or not it's being used properly. I hope that helps you, Shelley. Thanks for being on the program today. We'll be right back.
You know, Alex, one of my favorite things about Share-a-thon are the listeners' phone calls.
Yeah, exactly.
AFR listener stories encourage us and other listeners.
AFR has been a blessing to my husband and I.
Call 877-876-8893 and tell us your story. That's 877-876-8893.
I listen to y'all all day. Y'all been a big help.
877-876-8893.
We're grateful for support from Guidestone, whose diversified suite of investment solutions align with Christian values to create positive change in the world. More information is available at GuidestoneFunds.com. Investing involves risk, including potential loss of principal. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of Guidestone Funds before investing. They're distributed by Foresight Funds Distributors, LLC, which is not an advisory affiliate, a registered investment advisor, nor do they provide investment advice.
This fall, believers from across America will gather in our nation's capital. We'll hear from government leaders, policy experts, and leading Christian voices, learning how we can engage in government at every level, from local school boards to state legislatures to Congress and even the White House, to win back the soul of our nation. Join with us for the Pray, Vote, Stand Summit, Believe and Engage, September 15th through 17th. Register now at PrayVoteStand.org.
We are grateful for support from Eventide Investments on the Faith and Finance program. Eventide's approach to values-based investing is grounded in the belief that humankind was created in the image of God, with intrinsic dignity, value, and worth. Eventide calls this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at EventideInvestments.com. That's EventideInvestments.com.
Rob West of Faith and Finance.
If you've listened any length of time, you're aware that we often underscore the importance of preparing for the future. Well, as you look into the future, I suggest you consider the AFA Foundation in your estate planning. Call 800-326-4543, extension 345. That's 800-326-4543, extension 345.
As the leading advocate for the Christian financial industry, Kingdom Advisors serves the public by promoting the integration of a biblical worldview across every aspect of the financial services industry. And we serve a growing network of thousands of Christian financial professionals, equipping and empowering them to carry biblical financial wisdom to their clients, peers, and community. For more information, visit KingdomAdvisors.com. That's KingdomAdvisors.com.
Well, thanks for joining us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. We've got some lines open, 800-525-7000 with your financial questions today. Again, 800-525-7000. You can call right now. Coming up a little later in the broadcast, Bob Dahl will stop by. Bob will weigh in on a number of things that are a part of his weekly market commentary. We're going to be talking about the fact that a lot of corporations now were not seeing the words recession or inflation in their corporate transcripts. That's down substantially. What does Bob make of that? Also, corporate bankruptcies are up. In fact, up 50% this August from last August, year over year. Of course, a direct result of the Fed's raising of interest rates, among other things. We'll get Bob to weigh in on that. Also, can the Fed win the war against inflation without higher unemployment and a recession? We'll get Bob's take on that, plus the implications of globalization in light of just geopolitical events, China's economic issues, and less global leadership from the U.S. We'll get Bob's take on all of that. A lot to talk about today with Bob Dahl, Chief Investment Officer at Crossmark Global Investments. Again, taking your phone calls today. We'll be heading back to the phones here in just a moment, but you can call right now, 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. You know, we started today by talking about closing credit card accounts. And it's been a while since I've talked to you about what you need to know in light of credit scores. You know, how do you keep that credit score high? Well, let me say first and foremost, the goal is not a high credit score. The goal is to be a wise and faithful steward, to minimize the amount of interest that you're paying on your credit cards, make sure that you're giving wisely, you're living within your means. That is far more important than you maintaining a high score. But I also like the idea of you having that high score, because when you need to go out and seek credit for a productive purpose, that is where the economic cost is less than the economic gain for the borrowing. I'm talking about buying a house. I'm talking about borrowing for a business loan, things like that. Well, you want to be able to qualify for the very best rates and terms. The only way you're going to be able to do that is by having a high credit score. So what goes into that all elusive score that we know so little about? Well, FICO, which is probably the leading credit scoring algorithm out there, has published what makes up your score, at least the big categories, even though the actual formula is guarded kind of like the Coca-Cola secret. And the big one, of course, is your payment history at 35%. You being an on-time payer is essential to you maintaining a high credit score. You get that late payment or that black mark for a payment more than 30 days late that hits your credit score, that's going to pull it down most significantly because, again, that's the largest portion of your credit score. So we need to be aware of that. But right behind that, at 30% of what makes up your score, is the amounts owed. And this is where we get into this term that we talk about often called credit utilization. Credit utilization is just simply a function of the balances you're running versus the limit that's available to you. What will they extend to you in total? And how much of that have you actually used? That's the amounts owed. That's your credit utilization. You want to try to keep those balances under 30% of your limit. And that includes the amount that is reported at the end of the cycle. So keep in mind, even if you're paying it off at the end of every month, if you're doing it after the cycle closes, what's being reported to the bureau is the balance as of the end of the cycle prior to your payment. And if that balance is running up higher than 30% of your limit, well, that's going to pull your score down because they don't know that you're paying it off. They're just getting that one number a month. And for all they know on your credit report, it's actually, a running balance. So it's important that you monitor both individually by account as well as in the aggregate that you're not tipping above that 30% credit utilization. Next, behind that would be the length of your credit history. This is a key piece that just says how long have your credit accounts been established, including the age of your oldest account, the age of your newest account, and the average age of all of your accounts. This, of course, penalizes you for having less history than someone who has been paying on in good standing for a long period of time. Behind that is your credit mix. This considers the mix of credit card, retail accounts, installment loans, finance company accounts, and mortgage loans. It's not important to have one of each, but it is important to have a good mix, and they're looking for higher tier lenders. So you're going to get rewarded for having a credit card account or a mortgage with a top tier bank or credit card company versus you having a business being done with a finance company that's offering credit to substandard borrowers with much higher interest rates. But credit mix would be there. And then finally, new credit. Research shows that opening several credit accounts in a short period of time represents a greater risk. And so they're going to allow you to, or they're going to pull your score down if you don't have a long credit history and if you have a lot of new credit. So hopefully that helps you as you think about what are those factors that are driving my credit score today and how can I get that score up? Now, here's what's key. Just be a regular on-time payer, even if you've had some mistakes in the past that has resulted in some black marks that pulled your score down. Now, don't let anybody tell you you need to pay them to quote unquote repair your credit. Now, first of all, there is no repairing of your credit. There's nothing that can happen that you can't do yourself. The most significant thing is that you keep those balances low or at zero. That would be my recommendation. And you're an on-time payer every month with a good credit mix. Beyond that, we need to always be thinking about monitoring our credit account because the one thing that will happen on occasion is you will have some erroneous or inaccurate information on your credit report. Perhaps it shows an account that's not even yours. Maybe it shows one where you're carrying a balance, but you're not, or you were late on a payment.
We're grateful for support from Movement Mortgage, who provides residential home loans in all 50 states. Guided by a mission to love and value people and a goal to redefine the mortgage process, Movement seeks to help others achieve their financial goals. You can find out more at movement.com/faith. Movement Mortgage LLC supports Equal Housing Opportunity, NMLS number 39179. For licensing information, please visit nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Hello, I'm Don Hawkins, here to tell you about Encouragement Live, 55 minutes of industrial strength radio encouragement featuring resourceful guests plus practical biblical insights to help you face life's challenges. We'll be taking your phone calls, so plan to join us for Encouragement Live, Saturdays at 7:05 p.m. Central, 8:05 p.m. Eastern, here on American Family Radio.
We are grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing in the Faith and Finance program. If you have money in a retirement account or just a general investing account, you know the stock market can sometimes seem like a roller coaster. But it is possible to enjoy both profit and peace of mind in investing, no matter what's happening in the market. You can see a short video webinar on that topic at soundmindinvesting.org. Since 1990, Sound Mind Investing has sought to offer financial wisdom for living well. soundmindinvesting.org.
Are you searching for a way to become a better, faithful steward of the resources that God has given you? Well, download the FaithFi app and join the 37,000 others who are already using our app. The FaithFi app will provide you with wisdom, community, and simply help you stay on track with your finances. We have three money management options to choose from, so find an option that fits your unique needs. It's available on desktop or mobile. Simply go to faithfi.com and click app to get started.
What does the American Family Association stand for?
We believe true morality flows from biblical principles and directs people to the manner in which God intends them to live.
These values and more are part of our mission to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of our culture. We also support the church. We want to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training for cultural transformation. Thank you for standing with us as we seek to stop the erosion of godly values.
My name is Kent, and I'm a member of Christian Healthcare Ministries. I have a friend who actually has great insurance, and she recently had a life-threatening experience. And she was laying in the hospital bed afraid, not afraid for her life, but afraid of what her insurance would or would not cover. And as a CHM member, I can honestly say I just never have that fear. I can't tell you the peace of mind that provides.
Learn more about Christian Healthcare Ministries' biblical cost sharing at chministries.org.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
Thanks for joining us on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. It's such a privilege to come alongside you each day to be able to hear your stories and answer your questions, to be able to walk with you in this stewardship journey we all find ourselves on. Because here's the reality, at least my experience is that when we live in the tension of wrestling with God around how we should handle his money, what's the appropriate amount to spend and keep, and what, more importantly, should we be giving away, and what is God doing in our lives, and how can money as a tool be a reflection of that? You know, that's something that actually grows our faith when we lean into it. We make it a matter of prayer. I love what the last caller said. She said, you know what, you're right. My upbringing and the fact that I grew up very poor probably has a lot to do with how I handle money today and holding very tightly and being unwilling to lose any of it. And maybe I need to think about that. Maybe that's a matter of the heart that I need to turn over to the Lord. Well, we all have to ask those hard questions. And I think when we do, it will not only grow our faith, but make us better money managers. Hey, let's talk about that together today. What are you thinking about financially? All right, let's go to New Mexico. Hey, Don, thanks for calling, sir. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much for taking my call. And I just want to say I really appreciate your program.
Well, thank you.
I do have a question today concerning charitable organizations that you're giving money to from an IRA. I'm 67 right now, and we're doing a capital fundraising campaign at our church for a building. And I heard that at 70 and a half, it's still okay to give tax-free money from your 401k or your IRA to the church without taxes. Is that correct at 70 and a half?
It is not from a 401k, but an IRA. What you're talking about is a QCD or a qualified charitable distribution. And you can begin giving qualified charitable distributions from your IRA at age 70 and a half up to $100,000. And so what that does is it allows the money to go, Don, directly from the IRA to the charity or nonprofit or your church, allows them to get a full benefit of the money, and allows you to avoid paying any taxes on that distribution that would have otherwise been taxable. At the point where you have a required minimum, and that's now been pushed as of this year to age 73, you would also be able to satisfy that required minimum through that same qualified charitable distribution. It will not be able to come directly from your 401k, though. You would have to roll it into an IRA first.
Okay, that's marvelous. That makes a huge difference on how much you can give if you're not paying taxes on an IRA.
Well, that's exactly right. And it's a blessing to everyone, because you get more money into the kingdom, the ministry, or your church gets more money to be able to take and use for their programming, or in this case, a building project. And you get to satisfy the RMD, you know, when that time comes. So I think everybody wins. It's an underutilized tool. Let me just say that. So I'm glad you're discovering it. Hey, tell me what your church is doing. What's the building project?
We're building a worship center to seat about 500.
Nice.
And, which is marvelous. But it's a lot of money, you know, and it's going to be a God thing if it happens. So, and it will happen. It just matters. Well, God's got to be involved in it.
But that's the best way.
Given huge amounts of money, you know, the taxes are a big issue.
Yes.
Especially when you pull it out. Now you show an income of huge amounts, so you're paying high taxes.
Yeah.
High tax bracket.
So. That's exactly right, Don. I'm glad you brought this up. You know, here's the reality is that 90% of our wealth is held in the form of our balance sheet, and only 10% of giving is done in balance sheet giving, which means 90% of giving happens in the form of cash. When we give from our balance sheet, from your stock portfolio or a piece of real estate, and we do it in a tax-advantaged way like you're talking about, not only can we do it in a way that minimizes the tax impact, but it's just going to allow us to give a lot more over time, which is ultimately the name of the game. So, Don, thanks for calling. All the best to you and that and your church on that building project. God bless you, sir. Stephanie's in Florida. Stephanie, go right ahead.
Yes, I just have a question on the best way to invest. And I've never done that before, so I'm kind of leery of it. But I'm not working at the moment, but I'm currently looking for a job. But I have about $55,000. That is what I'm concerned, that's what I'm trying to find out about investing. And I have about $13,000 in credit card debt.
Okay. Was it because of a single event, or was it just kind of overspending for a period of time? How did you end up with that?
Well, without getting to a whole lot of it, I had gone through a divorce.
Okay. I certainly understand. And do you have, apart from this $50,000, do you have what I would call an emergency fund, which is your emergency reserves?
No, it'd be coming out of that. That's kind of what I'm living off of at the moment.
Okay, so you're living off of the $50,000?
Correct.
Okay, and what's the long-term plan there? Are you looking for a job, or what would allow you to move away from living off of that $50,000?
Yes, I'm currently looking for a job. I had to, I was in the middle of selling a house. It was a last marital asset. It was difficult emotionally to try to navigate. So now the house is sold, so now I'm freed up to work.
Okay, very good. Well, you've got a lot going on, and I certainly understand that this has been challenging, and it's resulted in not only this debt, but you just trying to navigate all of these things, including this home sale. And so I'm delighted that you're trying to take steps to move in this direction. I wouldn't be thinking about investing this $50,000 right now, Stephanie. I would just kind of sit tight, keep that in a savings account that's liquid. Just you focus on kind of what God has for you in this next season. Focus on getting this home sale closed, focused on moving if that's still to come. Let's focus on getting this debt paid off. If you do anything, I'd probably go ahead and pay off the credit card debt out of the $50,000 and then just sit tight. And then once you get into your new job, and we're just going to pray that the Lord provides just that right thing for you and you've got a good stream of income coming in, then we can start thinking about investing. And it's probably going to be best to come through salary deferral. So taking a portion of your paycheck and putting it into a retirement plan, I think, is going to be the best option. But given some of the changes that are going on, the uncertainty and this credit card debt, which is probably high interest, I would be looking at paying that off out of the $50,000. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I wouldn't be thinking about investing right now. If you wanted to hang on to all of the $50,000, then the other approach would be to get on a credit counseling program so we can get the interest rates down and get this debt paid off a lot quicker with one fixed monthly payment. And then let's just focus on getting that new job. And I'll certainly be praying for you in that as well. Before we head back to the phones, you know, the question often comes from believers. Well, what is a biblical perspective of retirement? You know, our modern concept of retirement isn't specifically a biblical concept. There's a narrow reference to retirement in the Bible in Numbers 8 with the Levitical priest, but that was in a very specific instance. I don't think we can apply that just across the board. You know, the cultural view of retirement is a modern concept. Before the 20th century, people worked as long as they could, and then came Social Security and pensions, and a retirement age at 65 became somewhat of an entitlement. Well, as believers, we need to remember our service to the Lord never ends. The Apostle John was writing and preaching in his 90s. Polycarp, the pastor of Smyrna, in the second century served, quote, 80 and 6 years, and then he was martyred. So Prudent savings is wise. We need to prepare for when we're physically unable to work, but we should retire to something, not from something, and realize God's calling on our life doesn't have an expiration. So we've got to balance that with a lot of prayer and wisdom. This is Faith and Finance. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Hi, this is Pastor Robert Morris. I'm often asked, how do I grow in my relationship with the Lord? How do I hear God? What is God's plan and purpose for me? I want to personally invite you to join me on Sunday mornings right here on AFR for worship and the Word. And we will discover the answer to these questions together. We'll explore the truths found in God's Word that will help you strengthen your faith and develop a more intimate relationship with Him.
Amy Carmichael was a missionary in India, rescuing little girls from abuse. In her 50-plus years of ministry, she witnessed the transforming power of the Bible.
Sorrowful people are comforted. People who were in the dark walk in the light. Is it not wonderful to think that this book is in our hands today?
Bert Harper and Alex McFarlane explore the wonders of the Bible, weekday afternoons at 3 Central on American Family Radio.
What's most important to you when it comes to choosing your financial advisor? Someone who's aligned with your biblical values? How about someone who will take the time to explain your options? Certified Kingdom Advisors are professionals who meet high standards in competence and integrity and have been trained to offer biblical financial advice. To find a Certified Kingdom Advisor in your area, visit faithfi.com and click Find a CKA.
We are grateful for support from Eventide Investments on the Faith and Finance program. Eventide's approach to values-based investing is grounded in the belief that humankind was created in the image of God, with intrinsic dignity, value, and worth. Eventide calls this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at eventideinvestments.com. That's eventideinvestments.com.
Thanks for joining us on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Let's head right back to the phones. We'll see if we can get to as many questions as we can here between now and the end of the program. To Michigan. Hi, Kim. How can I help you, sir?
Well, hi, Rob. Enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Got one kind of major question. My wife and I have been in church ministry for several years and really haven't established a retirement because we couldn't manage that. Yeah. She's an incredibly good budgeter, so she's got it down to where we do pretty well. When I started Social Security, we started because of extra income, saving the money for emergency fund and for retirement. But now our question is, we owe about $47,000 just over on our house, and we're trying to decide, should we just pay that off? We've got about 13 years to go on the mortgage. That will put us at 83 because we're 70 right now. What's your advice?
Yeah, so are you still working now?
I am still currently in ministry and have a part-time job.
Great. And how long, I mean, obviously only the Lord knows how long you'll continue to do this, but you can plan to continue this for the foreseeable future?
Yes, because I'm pretty good health and I enjoy both the ministry and then the work in a funeral home, which is, just like nice. An extension of my ministry.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it. Well, I mean, God, as you know, God created us to be workers. So, we want to continue to, throughout the whole of our life, be in service to Him, whether that's paid or not. Just the assignment changes along the way. If you were to pay off the house, where would the money come from?
It would come out of that savings that we've been saving for retirement.
Okay.
Our Social Security savings that we've been doing. So we
all
would.
Right. How much have you built up?
About 80,000.
Okay.
At this point.
Yeah, and that's just in a taxable account?
No, that's actually in our local bank.
Okay, but it's not inside a retirement account of any kind.
No, it is not. No,
okay,
I just have a few little things like that, but they don't amount to anything to talk about.
Yeah, got it. And so as you look at this, I mean, if you were to stop working for pay, I know you're really only working part-time right now, and let's say the house is payment's gone, are you all able to live on Social Security, or are you really needing to build something up that you could draw an income from to supplement?
Yeah, I don't think we could really make it on Social Security because, you know, our monthly budget right now is about $4,000, and Social Security will only get us to about half that, just a little over.
Yeah, okay. All right. So if you're going to need, you think, maybe a $1,500 a month, you think? Is that probably about right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, if you were to build up something, you know, to, let's say, $250,000, you know, at 4%, that'd be $10,000 a year. I mean, that still wouldn't get you there, but, you know, that at least give you $800 a month. You may need to take a little bit more than that. But I think the goal is, how do we, you know, over this next, you know, let's say decade, if that's, you know, how long you're continuing to work for pay, how do you build up something, you know, maybe $250,000? I think the key is to get that money into a tax deferred environment and get it invested. So what I'd probably do is, you know, let's pull out 6 months worth of emergency reserves. So if you're living on $4,000 a month, you know, that's $25,000 that you'd probably want to put in a, leave in that savings account. May want to consider moving that to an online savings where you can at least get a little bit of interest on it. And then, you know, that would leave you $55,000 to do something with. And I'd probably start funding, you know, a Roth IRA for you and your wife. You could each put in $7,500 over the age of 50 per year. And you wouldn't have any required minimums as long as you have earned income. And then, you know, that could be invested with the idea that, you know, we want to try to grow that over the next decade. You'd still want to be fairly conservative, but you'd, you know, I might have 50% bonds, 50% stocks, and just try to grow it. And, you know, you guys could put in $15,000 for this year if you wanted to do that. But tell me how you feel about that. Are you wanting to take a little bit of risk and try to grow this, or are you really wanting to stay more in bank type products that are guaranteed?
Well, we don't necessarily want to stay with the bank thing, but we don't want to be, you know, too invested in that right now because the banks are a little bit challenging or questionable, I guess is what I mean.
Yeah, I wouldn't be concerned about that. I mean, if unless you're in one of the, I mean, this was really isolated to some, we could see more of it for sure, but it was isolated to some very specific regional banks that had mismanaged their you know, portfolios, because when they take in deposits, they lend it out and, you know, then they buy U.S. government treasuries. They had a lot of long-term treasuries. They had, particular in the case of Silicon Valley, depositors that were needing their cash because they're in a high growth industry. And in this environment, they were draining their deposits, and that required them to sell these assets at a loss, which resulted in, you know, a run on the banks, on those banks. I think it's limited, and the government has taken extraordinary measures to backstop it. And even as of late, Secretary Yellen plus Fed Secretary also is out, you know, Chairman Powell, and saying that we may go even beyond 250. So if you're up to, you know, 250,000 or less, I don't think you have to be concerned. I think the question is, what's the best place to balance getting out of debt so you reduce your lifestyle as much as possible? I think the key there is to do that by the time you stop working, because that's going to get your biggest expense off the table. And if you had a conviction to do that right away, you certainly could go in and wipe it out, and you'd still have, you know, probably 12 months worth of expenses in the bank. But I think the question beyond that is, if Social Security is not enough, what can we do to grow some wealth over the next decade? I'm just using that as a ballpark for how long you're going to continue to work for pay. You could go beyond that. But what can we do to grow some wealth so you have an asset there that you can convert to an income stream, you know, to use for the rest of your life? And I think that's really the key. And so if it were me, I'd probably, you know, just continue paying on this mortgage and, you know, try to sock some money away in an IRA and then invest it in a fairly conservative way, but where you have a mix of stocks and bonds and give you the potential to grow it over the next 8 to 10 years. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it kind of does. We're both listening.
Okay.
So my wife,
but yeah, but give me your thoughts, you and your wife. I'm delighted she's listening as well, just on, you know, if that doesn't line up, because at the end of the day, you all are the stewards, and, you know, we want to align this with your values and priorities and, you know, what God's doing in your life as a couple and in your family. And I think, you know, if you're saying, listen, Rob, we just feel like the Lord's giving us a conviction to get out of debt, then I would say you do that and don't look back. But if not, and you want to just continue paying on this mortgage, and I assume it's at a low interest rate, and you want to take this 80 and set aside the 6 to 12 months worth of emergency funds and keep that in savings, and then take the rest and start socking it away over the next decade into an IRA and get it invested where it can grow, then that would make some sense to me, unless that's misaligned with where you all feel like God is leading you. And if that's the case, then I fully support that. So give me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, and we're certainly praying about it. You know, and I understand we need to invest to try to build that up. I just thought, you know, the interest our mortgage is 5.25%.
Oh, okay, so it's a little higher.
That was good back in 2006.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But
yeah,
we've never refinanced and so on like that. So
okay,
I think it was.
Yeah, so that may change things just slightly for me, because you know I was thinking you had one of these 2.75% or 3% rates. You know, with over 5, yeah, I like this idea of you all just wiping that out and then shoring up that savings of 6 months. And so that would be 47, and then if you put another 25. Into emergency savings, that's 72. And then you could take the remaining 8, and maybe that's what you use to start the IRA. And then you guys have some peace of mind to know, hey, we're completely debt-free. We don't owe anybody anything. And now we're going to focus on taking 100% of our surplus every month now that this mortgage is paid off and put it away toward long-term savings. You know, I think you could absolutely make a case for that at age 70.
Yeah, I think that sounds really good. That gives me a little more sense of relief, because we heard your Money Minute this morning. You just said save the interest, and that would save us quite a bit of interest, you know?
Yeah, I like that. Okay. Well, I think given that interest rate, I can get on board with that. Why don't you guys take another week or so and just pray about it separately and together and see where the Lord leads you. But we appreciate you being on the program today. Thanks for calling today, Kim, you and your wife. God bless you guys. Thanks for your service to the Lord over a long, long time. If we can help further, let us know. Quickly to Chicago. Joe, you'll be our last caller. Unfortunately, I was long-winded there. How can I help you?
Thank you, Ralph, for taking the call. My wife and I, we're both 57 years old. We recently financed. We have 28 years left on our mortgage. It's on a 3-flat building. We occupy one of the units, and the rents that come in on the building covers the mortgage with escrow and actually gives us about $150 of surplus. The rents are about 15 to 20% under market value. We have wonderful neighbors, and we want to keep them comfortable as well. With the interest rate, with the rate of inflation being what it is today, and I'm needing that 3% locked in for the next 20 years, should I just let the rents ride and pay the house off by itself, or should I make attempts to pay off the building earlier?
Yeah, and what would you use to pay it down quicker?
Our incomes. I'm 57 years old. I'm a first responder. I'll be retiring this year, but my wife will continue to work, and I'll be drawing about $5,000 on a monthly pension.
Okay, I got it. And what are you doing with that surplus now? If you're not paying toward the mortgage, are you putting it away in investments?
We just finished putting our last daughter into graduate school, so you know, she just wrapped up graduate school, so now we have this extra $150. And the rents pay off the mortgage completely, and we're kind of wondering, pay the building off sooner, or do we let it ride?
Yeah, I think I'd let it ride, especially since you're 15 to 20% under market. I don't think those renters are going anywhere, and now you're going to have some surplus now that your daughter's through grad school. I'd just sock that money away and let the buildings pay for themselves. We appreciate your call. Sorry I didn't have much time, Joe. Folks, thanks for being along with us today. I so love coming alongside you to encourage you and answer your questions and talk about how we can handle money God's way. On behalf of my team, Robert Sutherland, Pat Montague, and Devin Patrick, I'm Rob West. So glad you were here for Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Have a great rest of your day, and come back and join us tomorrow, will you? We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.